This is Kate Swanell for the MJA. Welcome to the latest in our centenary series of podcasts. Our special guest today is Dr. Ben McNeil, an oceanographer at the University of New South Wales, who is also the founder of research and innovation website thinkable.org. Let's assume for a moment that I know nothing about Thinkable.
Yeah.
Tell me all about it.
Thinkable is a place where anyone from around the world, whether it's a person or a business or an organisation or even a researcher, can connect with scientists and connect with the latest cutting-edge ideas in video format. So what we want to do is create a place where we break down the barriers for people to access, you know, great researchers, innovative minds, and they can learn and fund and follow them. That's essentially us.
Does it matter what field of interest you have?
No. So, I've been a researcher in ocean sciences for 17 odd years. And, you know, I've worked all around the world. And there's a few big problems, I guess I call as pain points as a scientist. The first one is that what I've found, and most of my colleagues found, is that collaboration is getting worse. Even with the internet, collaboration within the field of research is getting much worse. And I'll give you an example. One of my a really great mentor and friend of mine is Peter Doherty, the Nobel laureate from the University of Melbourne in 1996. We catch up every year or so, and he's in a completely different field. He's an immunologist, right?
Yes.
And I'm an oceanographer. And I publish my work in these specialist journals, and he does his work in his specialist journals. And he says to me, you know, he read one of my high-impact papers in PNAS or Science, and I have no idea what you're talking about, Ben. Your language in your field is completely alien. I have no idea the context or anything of what you're talking about. Now, if someone like Peter Doherty can't understand just the take-home sort of a thesis and what we've done in let's say a piece of paper or a piece of research or what have you, we have a huge problem, because innovation happens when we, as scientists, we take ideas that have been applied in other fields and we apply it in our own.
Yes.
If you look at all the Nobel Prizes, most of them have come from exactly that. They've taken from an adjacent field, taken something and matched it and innovated in their own field. So I guess the collaboration problem is getting worse because we're becoming so specialist and so complex within that specialty. So what we want to do is to take that back a level and to create a way whereby a researcher can give us a 3-minute sort of snapshot of what they've done. It could be a paper, a talk, an idea, or a poster, or anything. And just to give anyone a some sort of perspective of what they've done and their results. So if they want to learn more, they can obviously click on the paper and learn about the details. But that's the sort of first pain point. And then the second one is the funding element, whereby the system, whether it's in the United States or Europe or Australia, is really geared towards established researchers. That is, you've got a great track record, and you're pitching very incremental, sort of safe research in many ways. The problem with that is that the biggest discoveries tend to come from younger researchers, if you look at the stats, and also blue sky ideas, which seem impossible by peers at the time. So we think there's a really important we know that innovation is getting stifled, and we think that by connecting young scientists in particular without much track record with their ideas and their profiles with anyone, that we can provide that new way for support in that area that's so needed.
So crowdfunding, in other words.
Yeah, crowdfunding, I don't really like that term, because it's not really, you know, crowdfunding is essentially connecting people, you know, who want to support something, right?
Yes.
And in this case, it's not a widget or some, you know, book or movie production, it's about knowledge access, and you try and you want to support and engage with research as it happens. So yes, it is that. I guess you could call it that, but I think it's more about just connecting people. Here's a fascinating story, Kate, about Cochlear. You know Cochlear and Graham Clark. In fact, when Graham Clark came up with his crazy idea of inserting an electrode in the inner ear of people to make the profoundly deaf potentially hear again, he got rejected, right? He's a young researcher in the University of Melbourne. He got rejected by his senior peers, who sort of thought it was crazy, right? They all thought it's dangerous and crazy. The sort of typical profile of what happens today, right? That,
yes.
You push a seemingly impossible idea, and most peers will say it's crazy, so you can't get funded.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually did all he can. He couldn't get funding through the government, so he did all he could to try and raise research funds, right? As young researchers or any researcher would know, that you want to try and raise funds. He got some support through Lions and Rotaries and sort of organisations on the low end who gave him a few $1,000s here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, one of those checks that got written for him got written up in a local newspaper, and Reg Ansett, the owner of Channel 10 in 1974, said, "Oh wow, that's an amazing idea. Why don't we put on a telephone?" So in 1974, Channel 10 or Channel O at the time, got Graham Clark to come in, gave him a 5-minute sort of video-style documentary. He did a bit of a makeover, and essentially introduced it to the Australian public. And in 1974, you had thousands of Australians pitch in and said, "That's a fantastic idea." And that was the start of Cochlear, whereby after a few years of research, they developed the first prototype, and then governments and then a lot of venture backing came in. So I guess crowdfunding, yes, it's an old thing.
Yes.
You're trying to tap support in the community, right? That's essentially what it's doing.
So you're also sidestepping the establishment, traditional, set-in-stone ways of doing things, aren't you?
Well, yes, because, I've been in terms of the traditional system, that is where you have peer review assessment for your grants, for example. That's, I've been in that system for a long time, and I know that, and anyone who's listening who's part of that system knows there's massive flaws in it, right?
Because yes.
Even though I think I'm at the forefront of my field, I still couldn't pick, innovation if it smacks me in the face. You don't pick innovation, you don't know a certain project's going to be innovative, right?
Yes.
You know that there's researchers who are really on the cutting edge and are really passionate and intelligent and hardworking, and that's the type of metric that's more important than knowing that you're going to have 5 papers published by the end of the 2 years.
That's
the metric now, is that quantity of publications, not so much the innovativeness of the idea or in general, the researcher and how they engage with that idea and share their ideas. So I guess we're introducing a completely different model, which is hopeful, and we want it to be different because we want to fund it. We want to make funding, be geared towards ideas and innovation, not about track records.
Right.
That's really what we want it to be, because if we know track records, they're great for certain types of science. They're not potentially great for the big blue sky breakthrough ideas. That's a bias.
Yeah.
So we want to sort of introduce a new way of looking at that.
What are the rules in terms of ethical oversight?
Well, so right now you cannot be a researcher unless it's all through your organisations, right? So
right. Yep.
UNSW is, for example, our launch partner, but there's a number of organisations that are signing up across the world, and they approve all the projects that go up, right? And they approve not only the projects, they also approve researchers, right? The researcher has to be accredited and affiliated with the organisation.
Right.
So in terms of the ethical approvals, they go through their standard procedure of depending on the researcher and depending on the university.
Okay.
So it is not just a free-for-all. This is about high-quality science, and there's checks and balances for all the funding that goes directly to the institution to administer the funds.
Yep.
But at the same time, we're bringing in a completely new model to fund at least ideas and researchers that are struggling in the traditional sense. On Thinkable, it's really about engagement first and then funding second. But
yep.
You go on and you don't have to raise money if you don't want to. You can just showcase your work,
mm-hmm.
and you can build a fan base, and you can start following and learning about other areas of research and researchers. And then the funding, if you want to take on funding, you can, and that's been really that's helpful for a lot of researchers, as I said, who are missing out in the traditional sense. But in terms of the established researchers, it's a much given the system is heavily weighted in their favour anyway. Traditionally, there's no massive need to get the funding element from Thinkable.
Yeah.
But there is a definite big need for the engagement, right? So that's one of the big problems is that how is in science has somehow disconnected in many areas with society. As an institution, we're publicly backed, and the future of at least for UNSW and a number of other universities, is that we want to engage people. We want to engage and show people what we do as researchers, and that's hugely important because it's public backing anyway. In reality, they own the knowledge that is accrued, so they should be part of a system and part of the learning process. So I think in terms of what you're saying, funding, they not necessarily need that, the established researchers, but they do need the engagement side. So that's where they're coming in to showcase what they do in a new way.
Speaking as a complete non-scientist and just as a journalist, Thinkable sounds like a terrific resource for the media as well.
Yeah, I think we've had a lot of contact from a number of different people or sectors that we didn't really think of when we launched it,
mm-hmm.
And journalists was sort of one of them. I didn't recognise the importance of understanding what's happening with research in real time. In reality, the value is directly at the researcher level, right? So if you can connect with researchers and they're essentially sharing with the information with you in real time, even before the publication's out, then that's huge, huge value, right? But then there's other areas like teachers, for example. So school kids can now, for free, just start to follow, researchers and learn about what they're doing using video across the world, whether it's an astrophysicist or a cell biologist, they can start to learn. And they've never had that access before, Kate, because, as we know, the complexity and jargon with all the journals that we publish in is just way beyond anyone, even myself. There's a big learning curve for scientists. The early adopters, there's a lot of scientists who can communicate what they're doing in a way that translates complexity into simplicity. But it's a steep learning curve. That's one of the things we really want to put on the side is a resource tool for communicating what they do, because that's, how do you do it in 3 minutes? And we just think that how video completely can break down barriers and engage a completely different audience. Because traditionally, the audience that we have when we publish a paper is, a few 50 or so colleagues. They're in that specialist field, or maybe more if it's a high profile one, but not much. But Martin Rees, who's a biochemist who's done really highly complex specialist stuff at UNSW, he's just already had 9,000 views on his ideas just in 2 months.
Brilliant.
And he's raised $13,000 to help him continue doing his work. So aside from the funding, I really want to emphasise that point of, sharing our ideas and making them really translate to a lot of people. And share that knowledge, because I think that's hugely valuable for us as researchers not only for demonstrating what we do, but also engaging and collaborating. And because that's where we're about, right? We're about discovery. We want to discover things that hopefully benefit society. And I think that's where we want to really try and hopefully provide a tool, which the first sort of tool for researchers to really engage. And if they want to raise funds, they can too.
Terrific. That sounds like a good place to stop, Ben. Fantastic. Thank you for your time.
No worries, Kate.